This meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the RPM Subteam for Trademark Claims Data Review Call, held on Wednesday, the 13th of February, 2019, at 1700 UTC. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you are only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourself be known now?
This is Kathy Kleinman.
Thank you, Kathy.
That's what I wanted to say. Okay.
Thank you. I will make note of that. I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for recording purposes, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I will turn it over to Julie Hedlund. Please begin.
Thanks, Andrea. This is Julie Hedlund from staff. So I will just run through, as usual, a few of the administrative items and the agenda, and then I'll turn things over to Roger Carney, who, as subteam co-chair, will be chairing today's meeting. So on the agenda, we have review of the agenda and the statements of interest. Item two, review of the analysis group independent review of TMCH services and analysis group's responses with respect to the claims charter questions, and that's questions one through five, and you'll see them there with the links, and then any other business. May I ask if anyone has any other business? George Kirikos, please go ahead.
George Kirikos, the transcript. As I pointed out on the mailing list, I continue to have issues with the purported deadline of today for the submission of additional data. So I'd like to talk about that. I did formulate the Section 3.7 appeal, which I've not had an opportunity to be heard on that. So I, want to either, have the deadline extended, on today's call. We have two of the three co-chairs here, and we have other members here. I've posted, more than 40 data sources that would be suppressed if the deadline isn't extended. And given that these data sources aren't even going to be considered next week, the request to have a reasonable deadline is reasonable in itself. There's no reason for an early deadline except to suppress data sources. And so I'd like to have that on the agenda. Thank you.
Thank you, George. But I'll just note that this is the sub-team call. This is not a working group call. Those are subjects for a working group call or, and with the full working group, not the sub-team. Thank you for the reminder that we do have updated deadlines as were sent out earlier concerning the timeline, and I was going to briefly mention those, but I don't know that I need to now that you have done so. But this will be a call for the sub-team work, which is primarily, as you see, in agenda item two.
George here, may I quickly respond to that?
Please do.
George Rickles for the transcript. Yeah, the co-chairs have eliminated all sub-team calls except for eliminated all the main working group calls up until, I guess, the one scheduled at ICANN 64 in Tokyo. So, if I'm not being provided an opportunity to raise this topic, what's the appropriate forum? It's unreasonable.
Thank you for that, George. And I think you've already availed yourself of the appropriate forum, which is in the absence of a working group meeting, there is the list. So we'd certainly encourage you to continue to use the list to bring up any issues you may have with working group matters. And thank you very much. I'd like to go ahead and turn things over to Roger Carney for agenda item two. Please, Roger.
Thanks, Julie. All right, let's go ahead and jump in. We've got quite a few items here to review. Let's go ahead and jump on to charter question one. I think we'll start with anyone that's provided comments, want to add anything or help make people understand why you picked those items, and then we'll move on to people with additional comments. So I'll open it up to Kathy, Susan, or Rebecca if you have any additional comments that's not already in the document. All right. comments were pretty self-explanatory, so that's good. Is there anybody that has additional comments that they want to add to the claims charter question one? George, please go ahead.
Yeah, George Kirk, this is a transcript. Yeah, as I noted on the mailing list, I intentionally didn't fill it out this week to give other people the opportunity to shine, but I still did do the homework. And on this question, I would have added the 93.7% abandonment rate, which is on page 16, also on page 17 to 18 on table 4. That's a very important piece of data for this charter question. Also, the 113.2 million unique download requests on page 8. Combine that with the high abandonment rate, and that, you know, helps to answer this question. And also on page 18, there's a table which shows that there were 113,338 non-disputed registrations, only 346 disputed registrations, and 1,696,862 abandoned registrations. That's an important piece of data for this question. And also in the appendices on pages 64 to 65, it talks about the fees and costs being too high for registries and trademark holders. So I think these are all on topic for this question. Thank you.
Thanks, George. All right. Anyone have any additional things? That covers a lot. George added a lot to that. So any additional comments on this? Kathy?
Yeah, this is Kathy Kleinman. Hi, Roger. I'm experimenting with Skype to have a clear connection. Could you tell me if this is working?
It sounds good. It sounds good.
Fantastic. Great. Good. So I just wanted, I think it may be beneficial. There's a lot of stuff in today's table, and a lot of people did some good research. So I just wanted to share that relative to questions, we're looking at kind of umbrella questions here in one, but is the trademark claim service having its intended effect? And is it having unintended consequences? And even in the summary sections and then further into the detailed questions, the analysis group in this report finds, and I'll just summarize that, that the claim service and matching criteria may help deter rights infringing registrations that are exact matches to trademark strains, but it's also possible that some good faith registrations are being deterred by the current claim service, and which may be detrimental to the registration activity of non-trademark holder domain registrants. And we'll see a lot of discussion, particularly in the more detailed questions, about that issue is the deterrent effect. So I just wanted to highlight that, you know, we are seeing that the analysis group is showing us likely unintended consequences here. Thanks much.
Thanks, Kathy. All right, Susan.
Yeah, thanks. Hi, it's Susan Payne. I made this comment in some of the tables. I probably didn't make it in all of them, and I'm not going to be a kind of cracked record on it or anything, but I really do think when we're looking at this analysis group report, we have to take into, you know, strong consideration their own statements about the poor data that they have, the inability for them to form firm conclusions on practically everything, the fact that their findings shouldn't be used for policy development. Now, having said all that, obviously this is, you know, this is information, this is data we can bring into the mix, but a lot of these so-called findings by analysis group, when you actually read what they say, are not findings at all. They're kind of, you know, assumptions that they've drawn based on pretty much no evidence whatsoever, but just like, oh, it might be this, it might be that. And so we really do have to take that into account. And that, you know, for example, on this, you know, it might have deterred good faith, it might have deterred bad faith. I mean, it, you know, they're completely on the fence, so they've got no real evidence to support either claim. So I just wanted to flag that. I'm not going to say that on every single question that we go through.
Okay, perfect, Susan. Thank you. Rebecca, please go ahead.
Rebecca Tushnet. So let me speak in partial agreement with Susan. I think it's correct to say that we don't know anything about the proportions of bad faith registrants We don't know anything about whether bad faith registrants are being deterred. In part because we've been prevented from getting the underlying data. So, you know, if we saw 50,000 attempts to register Microsoft, we could probably do a little bit better on our expectations about whether that was bad faith or not. But that doesn't mean that no policy conclusions follow. In fact, we do have the most queried list of these common terms. And we have other evidence, so we can say that what we don't have is evidence of the policy working. You can then a lot of things might follow from that, including like let's have a standstill. You can make arguments to get rid of the policy. You can make arguments to expand the policy. But I think it is important to say like we just don't have any evidence of how it's working, and we don't have any evidence of the effect on bad faith. Registrants specifically. That's useful information. Thank you.
Thanks, Rebecca. And I'll point everybody to the chat that's going on. There's some good stuff going on there between Griffin and George as well. Meaning, yes, the data is great. We just had to put it together and make our conclusions from it. So anybody else have any comments on Charter Question 1 before we move on? No? Okay. We can move on to question number 2. And again, I'll open the floor up to the commenters to see if they want to add anything. Kathy, Susan, Rebecca, anything as we get started? Okay, well, I'll open it up to everybody to see if anyone has comments on Charter Question 2. Kathy, please go ahead.
Yeah, so here, Charter Question 2 is, this is Kathy, of course. What about the trademark claims notice, and I'm summarizing, should be adjusted, added, or eliminated? Should it be extended, shortened, mandatory, et cetera? And here, We do have some pretty strong and clear statements from the analysis group that, I'll just summarize, and I put in the full quotes because I didn't think people had to, put down what they were doing and go back to the analysis group report. So the quotes are here with the page numbers, but the analysis group says extending the claims period or matching or expanding the matching criteria used for triggering claim service notifications may be of limited benefit to trademark holders and may be associated with costs incurred by other stakeholder groups. And they go through a number of tests where they try to determine what would happen if the claim service period was extended. I mean, this is exactly what we're looking for to help answer this question. And they actually find that registration activity, among other things, that registration activity declined after the 90-day claim service period ends. So any additional month added to the claim service period will likely have diminishing value. And some other things. So I just wanted to, and then also on page 17, farther into the report and farther down in the table here, they also again talk about expanding the claim service period. And they say we find no evidence that bad faith registrations are timed strategically to avoid triggering claim service notification. And so again, that extending that period probably wouldn't be of additional value or much additional value in what we're talking about. So I just wanted to point people to these quotes that I added and hope people will take a look at them. Thanks.
Thanks, Kathy. All right, George, please go ahead.
Thanks, George Kourikos for the transcript. Going to question, Charter Question 2C, should the claims period be mandatory? I think that chart, Table 4 on page 18, is still relevant. The 113,338 non-disputed registrations with only 346 disputed and the 1.7 million abandoned registrations. Also, as I mentioned for question one, there was the fees and the costs being too high for registries and trademark holders, on pages 64 to 65. So that's still relevant to this question. And also, on pages 14 through 15, trademark holders want longer claims, whereas registrars find it costly and oppose that. And so, that could lead to different, views depending on which one takes. Thanks.
Thanks, George. All right. Any other comments on charter question two? All right, perfect. Let's move on to charter question three. And again, I'll open it up to the commenters. If Rebecca wants to say anything on her note, please go ahead. Otherwise, we can move on to anyone else that has any comments on charter question three. All right, Kathy, please go ahead.
Hi, Roger. Kathy, so since charter question three is, does the trademark claims notice the domain name applicants meet its intended purpose? And particularly, I think one of the big findings that we had here, months ago when we initially looked at this, was how many of these was that a large number of these trademark claims notices appear to be going out for common dictionary words. What Rebecca says is common words for large classes of legitimate economic and social activity. And this is not, I think, what many people intended when these original rules were drafted. I think we're going to be seeing some additional data that sheds light on the fact that some of these are not famous trademarks at all or globally known marks. And so there is, there's a suggestion in the data, in the clear data that we're looking at, of the substantial risk when applicants get the notice that they will be driven away from registering things in good faith that the trademark notice was actually designed to kind of encourage or allow. That's a complicated way of saying it, but I think we really have to look at what's coming through on the trademark notice and the ordinary words that the large number of ordinary words from this data of the analysis group that trademark registrants are getting, and we have to consider that as we're redrafting the trademark claims notice and this process. Thanks.
Great. Thanks, Kathy. Susan, please go ahead.
Thanks, yeah. Just really quickly, I don't dispute Kathy's conclusion at all that we need to bear this in mind when we're redrafting the claims notice language. We've talked about redrafting the claims notice language now for some years. I don't think there's anyone in this group who actually thinks that doesn't need to be done. So I'm completely on board with that. But, just to kind of flag or stress that, this within ICANN, it's not our role to be making determinations about whether trademarks are valid. You can look at those words and form your own determination if you think they shouldn't have been issued. But the trademark office in question, who issued the trademark, applied the law that they apply and granted those trademarks. And it's not our job to be rejudging that or finding that particular trademarks are inappropriate. That's not ICANN's job. But I'm not disputing that that we want to minimize the chance that some registrants might be chilled if the terminology used in the notice is insufficiently clear to them.
Great. Thanks, Susan. Rebecca, please go ahead.
Rebecca Tashnet, thank you. So this isn't a question of the validity of the underlying mark, actually. I think it goes directly to the unintended effects of how this particular system, which is set up to send out notifications based only on a textual match to a common term that's only a trademark under certain circumstances, it goes out to everyone who tries. And that is just something that we need to take into account now that we know that, in fact, the biggest triggers of these notifications are common terms that aren't actually marked like Apple, but are in fact things like cloud. You know, I'm sure it is a valid mark for pens in the Netherlands. Nonetheless, it's triggering a lot of notifications that are more likely than a notification for Microsoft to have negative unintended effects. So that's something we need to take into account. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Rebecca. All right, Brian, please go ahead.
Thank you, Brian Beckham, for the record. And I want to be clear here. I'm not speaking in any chair capacity. I wanted to echo Susan's comment. And I think, you know, Rebecca raises relevant considerations. I think we do want to be mindful that there are different national and international trademark regimes, and they have different requirements, whether that goes to specimens of use or whatnot. And I'm going to put in the chat. I think, you know, in some respects, maybe another way to look at it is, okay, we have a problem in front of us, which is, you know, which marks are allowed in and on what basis do they, you know, either trigger claims notices or can be used for sunrises. And so what I'll put in the chat is a proposal from July of 2017 where I had suggested that maybe a more productive way to address this, which I think is a tough question. Again, we're looking at, you know, different national and international trademark regimes, would be to address this at the level of the Sunrise Dispute Resolution Policy. So I'll put that in the chat and wanted to propose that as a possible way forward. Thanks.
Okay, great. Thanks, Brian. Kathy, please go ahead.
Yeah, responding to Brian, I just wanted to share that the Center Dispute Resolution Policy, from everything I can find, was premised in part on the openness of the Trademark Clearinghouse, which was the original premise when it was passed by the council and the board. So it's not usable by a number of groups that might want to engage in those types of complaints or challenges. Thanks.
Thanks, Kathy. Brian, please go ahead.
Thank you, Michael. This is Brian. I want to just this may betray a degree of ignorance on the claims notices, but Kathy, is it the case that there would be an opportunity to see the underlying mark that's being invoked when a claims notice was received? So, in other words, is it necessary to know in advance the trademark rights that are being invoked, or would there be an opportunity once a person is given a claims notice to then understand the scope of protection and possibly to invoke the SDRP process? And when I say that, I mean in a possibly amended form as well. Thanks. So, again, I don't know the answer, but if it is the case that the registrant would be on would know the trademark rights being invoked once they receive a claims notice, that may go to your question, Kathy.
May I respond?
Yes, please go ahead, Kathy.
Okay. First, I think by the time you get to general availability, and fact checkers out there, please check me, I think in general you're outside the scope of the SDRP. I think it was intended to allow people to challenge during the sunrise period. Again, I think it has a limited window that many would not be allowed to use after they got a trademark claim. But also, it wasn't supposed to just be limited to the trademark claims notice. And that's a hard time to think about challenging something, kind of when you're standing on one foot looking at a notice. But I think we should both dive into this, Brian, because I think effectively the SDRP is just about useless right now. Anyway, thanks.
Great. Thanks, Brian and Kathy, for that. Susan, please go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, thank you. I'm probably being a bit dim, but I'm not quite sure why we're talking about the SDRP in this context, given that this is the claims subgroup. And of course, the very fact that claims notices are being generated on these particular marks means that to a large extent they weren't being utilized the trademark owner for the Sunrise, because if the Sunrise, if a mark had been utilized and led to a registration of a domain in the Sunrise, then there wouldn't be a subsequent opportunity for anyone to register it. So I'm not quite sure why we're talking about the Sunrise dispute resolution process here, but I'm probably missing something.
Thanks, Susan. Brian or Kathy, want to talk to that real quick or not? I mean, okay. All right, any other comments, questions about charter question 3? Again, a lot of talk going on in the chat, so if you're interested, please read through those. A lot of good discussions. Okay, no other comments. We'll move on to charter question 4. George, please go ahead.
I see Kathy's hand is first, so she might want to go ahead of me. Oh.
Okay. Thanks, George. Kathy, please go ahead.
Sure, although I'm happy to wait for George. Okay, so here the charter question is the exact match requirement for trademark claims serving the intended purposes for the trademark claims RPM? And then it asks about IDMs and Latin-based words, which I don't think, unless I missed something, I don't think the analysis group talks about IDMs and Latin-based words, so we're in the English ASCII system. And then the claims, our charter question is asking, is there evidence of harm under the existing system, and should the matching criteria for notices be expanded? And here we do have some really clear answers from the analysis group that based on their research, and let me see if I can read it. And I read this earlier, but it applies here as well. Extending the claim service period or expanding the matching criteria used for triggering claim service notifications may be of limited benefit to trademark holders and may be associated with costs incurred by other stakeholder groups such as registries, registrars, and non-trademark holder domain registrants. And so you'll see that there are tables, table 10 in particular, talking about kind of analysis that they did relative to expansion and finding that dispute rates, Susan has already pointed out, tables are not my specialty, but this result indicates that, and here I'm quoting, expanding the matching criteria would not help to deter many bad faith registrations that would be disputed by trademark holders. So they kind of look in and they investigate the expansion of the matching and, At least we have some data on this now, which is good. Thank you very much. Back to you, Roger.
Great, thanks, Kathy. All right, George, please go ahead.
George, request for the transcript. Yeah, I agree with the findings or the nuggets that Kathy, Susan, and Rebecca identified on this question. There was an additional one I found on page 28, which was a clear statement of them saying, we find no clear evidence that expanding the matching criteria will outweigh the potential costs of doing so. But they kind of repeat that everywhere else. So, but that's another instance that could be added to the table, to the list of relevant tidbits. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thanks, George. Susan, please go ahead.
Thanks. Just to follow on what George said, they also do make multiple references to the fact that they've made no cost-benefit analysis whatsoever. Thanks.
Thank you. Yes. Okay. Any other comments, questions on our question four? Okay, excellent. Let's move on to the last charter question, charter question five. It doesn't look like anybody had anything directly from that, so I'll open it up to whoever has comments on this. George, please go ahead.
Yeah, George Griffiths here. I did actually find a couple of examples that might be relevant for this question. On page 7, they noted that 97% of the marks were in Latin script, which might be a useful piece of information in terms of IDN TLDs, for example. And also, right. It was noted that there were only 1,700 users, this is still on page 7, with great preponderance of dominance from the United States of America. And so that might be relevant information for GOTLDs outside the United States. You might not want to give claims notices or sunrises when we get to that topic to American mark holders if it's a dot Moscow, for example. Thank you.
Right. Great. Thanks, George. Okay. Any other comments? Okay, great. I like that we made it through this nice and quickly. Homework was probably not quite as quick, but at least we were able to get through this smoothly. Anyone else have any other comments that they want to bring up outside of this? Okay. Well, then I will turn it back over to Julie.
Oh, thank you very much, Roger. And this is Julie Hedman from staff. So we just wanted to take a moment to suggest a homework assignment for next week and to remind folks that we have an extension for the meetings to go over the previously collected data through to the end of February. So we have two more meetings, the meeting on the 20th and the meeting on the 27th. And The homework assignment we're suggesting for next week, in coordination, obviously, with the sub-team co-chairs, is the INTA survey, which there's actually two slides associated with that. So we thought we would suggest that, unless folks have any other ideas that they would like to suggest with respect to homework. Oh, and one other thing I should mention also is that we will open the documents back up for the previously assigned sources. So if you should have other comments that you would like to add that you've not been able to, say, for instance, when the documents were closed, you can go ahead and put comments in on the previously assigned sources. In particular, I think, George Kirikos, you mentioned that you had some additional comments. You're free to add those as well. And Kathy Kleinman, I see you have your hand up.
Hi, Julie. This is Kathy. Question about the INTA survey. The packets that we're looking at, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I think are slides. Is it possible to get the link for those of us who are gluttons for punishment for the underlying survey itself?
Thank you, Kathy. I think we can do that. We'll certainly look into that. And I assume it's probably linked on the wiki somewhere, actually, let me retract that just for a moment, because I'm not sure if that survey data is something that we were privy to in the working group, so let's take that back under advisement and see whether or not that's something we can get. And we can always ask Lori Shulman as well, but we'll first look back and see what we originally provided. Thank you. And any other comments on the homework? And I'm consulting with staff here just now on the question about the survey. I'm not sure that actually we had the raw survey results, but we can go back and check with the CCT support staff and see if there's anything further that they can provide. And Kathy, we'll definitely do that and pick that up as an action item. So other than that, we'll just meet at the usual time next Wednesday, the 20th, at 1700 UTC. And I don't see anything else. So I think that looks like we can let this call end a little bit early, which is good because some of us and some of you are going to be joining the Sunrise Claims call that will start about 5 minutes past the top of the hour. And I'm just looking again. And I don't see, and happy Valentine's Day, indeed. Happy Valentine's Day to all of you. And thanks for that. And Andrea, we can go ahead and adjourn the call.
Thank you. This concludes today's conference. Please remember to disconnect all lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.